Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Anawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library, which includes lifetime online access to a printable 1,000-page intelligence briefing and a worldwide indigenous prophecy encyclopedia. Now, folks, there's nothing else like this collection on the planet. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files and 222 folders. It includes the Prophecy Keeper's Prepper's Self-Reliance files and all of our previous over 100 Prophecy Keepers interviews. So head on over to prophecykeepers.com right now and have a free sneak peek today of two-thirds of the Prophecy Keepers trilogy and a peek of the dashboard of the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault. Osio Ginalii Tahiju Toigu, which means, hello cousins, I'm fine, how are you? This is your old buddy Bluewater coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau in east central Tennessee, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the old Cherokee Nation.
Well, hello everybody. This is your old buddy Bluewater coming to you from Booger County in the mysterious Ozarks in Mid-America, and our guests this week, beginning July 16, 2005, is author Dottie Daigle. And Dottie, last year we interviewed her when she authored the book Red Hat Speaks, and she's back this year with another great book, Red Hat's Wisdom. And welcome to the show, Dottie. How are you?
Very good. It's good to be back.
Good to hear from you. How has this past year been for you? What have you been up to?
Oh, it's been fantastic. Getting this last book out, Red Hat's Wisdom, that's just terrific. John would have been so happy.
I know.
Although I think he knows. I think on the other side he knows what's happening.
Oh yeah, I know he is. He visited me. I can't remember when it was. He just let me know he was backing us up. He literally hopped into this truck I was driving and started backing it up.
Oh wow.
In his truck, you know, and
I know he's with us because 3 days after he died, and I was grieving for him quite a bit, and I knew he came back, and he told me that he had gotten permission to continue this work with me, and permission was the key word, and I've seen him once since then, so I know he's back with us. So in life, when I took care of him right to the end, Now he's taking care of me, and he's doing a terrific job.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know he wouldn't have it any other way. When I knew him, he was very ill and very weak. But you could tell he was just a force of nature.
He really was. He had a very strong character, very strong will. Strong will to live, too, right up to the end.
Well, what have you been doing this year besides that? Who have you visited?
Well, I've been maintaining a couple of websites, group websites, interactive, and then I've been posting on a couple other sites.
Right. So we set up the Red Hat Speaks website for you, and then you've got a couple of discussion groups.
Yeah, I have Red Hat Speaks on MSN groups.
Right.
And then I have the Campanile Society also on MSN groups.
That's right.
That's groups.msn.com/the Campanile Society. That's way back in 1993. John and I and another young man, an anthropologist, founded the Campanile Society. And it was based on Judeo-Christian is what it was based on, and Native American spirituality. But anyway, then we didn't do anything with it other than that. We wrote up the precepts for it. There were 12 precepts, and that was in 93. And up until 2003 was when I started the website. I believe it was 2003. That I started the website, and it turns out it's an online church is what it is.
Yeah, I guess the Campanile was the bell tower that anybody could go to in the ancient world. They know they could find a friend.
Exactly, that they knew that's where they could find help. And John was given that name, Campanile, and he wondered why, and he looked it up in the dictionary and found out that was the tower of the early Christians, and when people saw that tower, they knew that's where they could find help.
Well,
what we were given.
I've been doing a lot of reading here recently. I discovered the restored Netzarim, that's Netzarim sect of Judaism.
Oh.
Here fairly recently, and I've been doing some reading. The first book that you read when you get involved with the Restored Netzarim is a book called The Conflict Between the Church and the Synagogue. It was written by a fellow by the name of Parks back in 1923. And it really, I believe he was an Oxford scholar, but the book, the first five chapters of the book are required reading before you get into the history of the Netzarim.
Mm-hmm.
And the Netzarim are actually a restoration of the Nazarene sect. The teachings literally lied dormant until 1985, until a Baptist minister discovered the teachings and changed his life. And There have been writings, Dead Sea Scrolls and other things that are really interesting, concerning the real teachings of the real person who came to be called Jesus. And they found out some really interesting things about him, that he was not only a rabbi, he was a ribbi. To be a ribbi during the Tanaitic period, you had to had been ordained by the head of the Sanhedrin, who was Gamaliel. But during that period, you not only had to have that ordination, but the ordination had to be approved by the Sanhedrin itself. So people are waking up to the fact that the Pharisees were actually the people's party, so to speak, and that the Sadducees were they kind of bought their way in to partial control over the temple about the time the Romans took over and appointed a puppet king And the real Sadducees took off, went to Camp Qumran, and started writing. And what it's really interesting, you know, when you find out, you know, Jesus taught the Torah, upheld the Torah, and basically, you know, the revolutionary idea that, that he introduced was that God had a spirit, and guess what? That spirit can come live in you and help you understand what, you know.
Yeah.
It's the same thing John taught, you know. Same thing Red Hat teaches. So, but it really is exciting to see those things come to life. And to learn
that about Christ, that I love the concept that Christ is the divine love of God. And so Creator wanted to teach men about his divine love, and so what better way than to incarnate into a man, Christ. So it was Christ in Jesus that was part of God, that was Creator's spirit.
Well, Jesus talked about, you know, there'd be a falling away. It didn't take long, you know, about 100 years after he departed, you know, during that 100 years, you know, the Judeo-Christians, the Jews who became his followers, and the Gentiles pretty much lived, you know, side by side. And they formed the Gentiles asked for a separate collegium or school because they thought that it would be easier to take care of the daily distribution of alms to the widows. But because the world around them was basically Gentile, and you know, with the coming of the, as time passed more, you know, that basically the Jews decided that they wanted to follow Bar Kokhba, and many followed him into the Bar Kokhba revolt that that ended with about the complete destruction of Jerusalem and and then, you know, once they kicked the Jews out, then that basically left the Gentile Christians were able to stay in Jerusalem, and they just kind of grew into what we have today. And the 14th successor to James the Just, who's Jesus' brother, was run out of Jerusalem in 135 A.D. And by 333 A.D., all of the Jewish Christians were gone. So, and that's, and I thought it was really interesting. You really can't find any writings of any early church fathers till about 150 A.D. So, just about the complete picture of what we have, of supposedly what Jesus has, as far as the, you know, the really early church, so-called church fathers, was basically after the Jewish Christians were gone. So, and they just kind of divorced each other, and which was too bad too. And
that really is sad because Jesus taught spiritual Judaism.
Right.
He taught the spiritual part of the Torah, and Christianity today should be in total harmony with the Torah.
That's right.
It should be built on that foundation. Christians put the book of the Bible at the bottom and weigh everything against that as the truth. Well, Judaism places the Torah at the bottom, and everything is, that is the book of truth at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And everything is weighed against that. If it's true in the Torah, then any other writing that harmonizes with that spiritual aspect of the Torah is also true.
That's right. You know, it wasn't until Stephen started preaching against the law of Moses that any real problem started. And, you know, Paul was running around Asia Minor teaching, as a Jew, teaching other Jews that they didn't have to follow the law. Then he would come to Jerusalem, and then he would follow the law. And then, you know, one day he was in the, you know, I think he was in the temple precinct, and he was recognized, and a riot started. So it's just, it was just such a mess. And it really was unfortunate. And, you know, pretty much, you know, the New Testament is, you know, most of the ideas of, you know, what is a Christian, you know, comes from Paul. people need to realize that, you know, he wasn't well liked by, or what he was teaching, you know, wasn't well liked by people that, that actually knew and worked with Jesus. And it wasn't a competition thing. They just felt that he really was off the beam. And but I guess that, you know, Jesus said there'd be a falling away, and it takes it takes a while. I'm sure God knew that as time progressed that there would be other records that would come forward and people would be able to sort these things out. But the basic message is that God is love.
That is true.
And as long as we remember that, all the rest of it really is, it just falls away.
And that's what Elder Red Hat taught. He said that only unconditional love can cure the ills of humanity.
That's right.
And that was one of the last things he wrote, that it's got to be love. And throughout the whole thing, from the beginning of Christianity, from the early years, you could see a direction where the dark forces have taken people. And it's just amazing to me when I realized just a few days ago what the real effect has been of, of what John was teaching. And it's like in the Torah it says that love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. Well, then today people have learned to stop that flow of love, and that's where the dark forces have gotten humanity to be. In Luke 10:25-28. Where the lawyer asked Jesus, what must I do to gain eternal life? And Jesus told him, what is written in the law? What is your reading of it? And the lawyer said, love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. And Jesus said, you have answered correctly. Do this, and life is yours. So Jesus said that loving others is the way to eternal life in the presence of Creator. And then again in John, the 15th chapter of John, Jesus talked to his disciples, and he told them, love one another even as I have loved you. And the interesting thing, he was talking to his disciples who were all men, but yet he told them to love one another. And this was a spiritual type of love. But humanity, somehow, our Western culture has brought this down to the physical level. It's like they have blocked out the spiritual, and they can't get beyond that. They can only look at the physical. So when Jesus told us love one another, one man is supposed to love another man, and that is the way to get to heaven. But humanity has learned to block that out, and so the dark forces have messed them up really good. It's like whenever they think love another man, they think homosexuality right off. And it has nothing to do with that. It's the compassion, it's the spiritual compassion that one person has for another.
Yeah.
And that's the love we're supposed to have for other people.
How could you miss that?
Yeah, and it just amazes me now that that's where the dark forces have gotten people, so that they stop the flow of love. They stop the very thing that is required to buy them the ticket to heaven. And it's really just astounding that that's where it has all led to.
Well, I'm just absolutely amazed at how the scriptures, you know, everybody, a lot of people have read the Bible, but mm-hmm. I was introduced to a part of the Bible that just absolutely blew me away.
Oh, yeah.
And in John chapter 11, you know, after Jesus raised the fellow from the dead, you know, they...
Uh-huh.
There was some witnesses that went to the Pharisees and told them what Jesus had done. And I'm reading now from King James.
Yeah, okay.
Verses. So the chief priests and the Pharisees convened the Sanhedrin and said, what are we going to do? This man is performing many signs. I mean, you can see them, they're panicking. You know, they've got a whole bunch of people running around during that period of time claiming to be the Messiah. They were expecting something to happen about that time.
Mm-hmm.
And so the argument was, well, if we leave him alone, you know, everybody will believe in him, and the Romans will come and take away both our land and our nation. And see, they had a the Jews had a relationship with Rome. They were recognized as a faith. They were jurisdiction over their own people and their own as long as they collected the taxes and so forth, and you know, they had pretty much total jurisdiction over their own people.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Friends, this is Will Bluewater. Would you think twice about defending yourself or a loved one from an intruder? In this day and age, would you dream of leaving your doors unlocked at night for fear of being burglarized or even attacked or worse? Would you? But when it comes to our own bodies, the doors to our houses are wide open all the time. The very air we breathe and the food we eat, especially here in the United States, creates free radicals that cause us to age and in some cases cause illness, some of which are deadly. Now, for the first time in history, there's a supplement called Protandim that is listed on the U.S. government's PubMed.gov website with many peer-reviewed studies all showing that Protandim is a proven killer of the free radicals that are aging and in some cases even killing us. Now, I'm not talking about killing one molecule of free radical per one molecule of antioxidants like the stuff we've been taking. I'm talking about killing 1 million free radicals per second, per molecule, and this is the very same antioxidant your own body produces. Protandim supercharges your body to create much more than it does without Protandim. There's an old saying that we are warned about in the scriptures. That's the attitude, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. So let me ask you, how much money do you spend on food a day? If you're out shopping or at the beach, would you think anything of spending a buck or even more on a can of soda? If there was a vending machine that sold something that killed what was aging you or even killing you, would you even hesitate to spend a buck and a half a day? Well, now there is such a vending machine, and it's sitting right in front of you. It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now. Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
Hi, friends. This is Will Bluewater. I have a message here from 1975 from John Wayne. It comes right out of today's headlines. So you Indian folks who are following the progressive trend in politics, you're following the people that supported slavery. You're following the people that have enslaved you ever since the Civil War. Listen to John Wayne.
You know, it's a funny thing, the Indians now, this AIM group have started something that now they're against me for some reason, but I am the only man in pictures that always gave them their human dignity. I never was in a picture. I never allowed myself at any time to do anything that would take their human dignity away from them, and that to me is the most important thing in a man. I have found that a certain type that calls himself a liberal, and I always thought I was a liberal. I came up terribly surprised one time when I found that I was a right-wing conservative extremist. When I have listened to everybody's point of view that I ever met, and then decide how I should feel. I mean, but this so-called new liberal group, Jesus, they never listen to your point of view, and they make a decision as to what you think, and they're articulate enough and in control of enough of the press to force that image out for the average person. For some reason, maybe it's these pictures, they have not been able to do that with me. In spite of what they say, people have not taken sides that I'm it hasn't affected my career in popularity, let's say. In spite of the fact that they've tried to make it do it. There isn't a hell of a lot to that we can do to change human behavior. We keep making laws to try and change human behavior. You can't do it. I think you can accept it and feel how you would feel in that position. You're being conned into Keynesianism and socialism now. But it isn't going to stop the selfishness of human behavior. It isn't going to stop the greed. If you give, take $20 and give a dollar to every son of a bitch in a room, and come back a year later, one of the bastards will have most of the money. I mean, it's just human nature, and you're not going to you're not going to whip it with a lot of laws. I think when you make people conscious, as communication gets better, and you make people conscious of somebody in trouble, starving or something like that, the average person will help. But of course now they've got so damn many charities, and there's so much professionalism. You know, there's if you have a charity, you hire some professionals to work up the charity. By the time you get the money, you get $4 for the recipient and $400 for the administrators. So I mean, Christ, I think there are people who try to affect a thinking where they know more than some other son of a bitch, and try to put a false impression on what human nature is. Christ's sakes, we have proven that we go back to hope at the first opportunity. Just throw out a little fish and bam, they're out there ready to grab it. So we are optimistic. We have to be optimistic. Christ, what else would there be in life if you lose optimism?
But anyway, you know, Caiaphas, over the years, and when I grew up, you know, he was the boogeyman. He was the one that supposedly condemned Christ. But here, and so Caiaphas, you know, who's been portrayed like in Jesus Christ Superstar as being the devil in this whole thing,
mm-hmm.
You know, right there in John, the 11th chapter of John, it says, but one of them, Caiaphas, who was the high priest that year, said to them, "You know nothing. Nor do you consider that it's better for you that one man should die instead of the people, so that the whole nation may not perish?"
Hmm.
And it says he did not say this on his own, but since he was high priest for that year, he prophesied that Jesus was going to die for the nation, and not only for the nation, but also to gather into one the dispersed children of God. So from that day, they planned to kill him. You know, well, that's been taken and turned against them. And the other scripture that's turned against the Jews is that when they were crying for him, you know, crucify him, they were saying, "Let his blood be upon us." Well, that's something that the Jews would do if they thought he was the Messiah. Apparently, they did, and people didn't understand the kind of behaviors that that Judaists had, and that was, you know, one of the things they would say. But they were expecting a Bar Kokhba. They were expecting somebody to come in and lead them in revolt against the Romans, you know, so they could have control over their own territory.
Mm-hmm.
And that just wasn't going to happen right then. That wasn't what their soul needed right then, but
right.
That's what they want.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I think right now we're in the beginning of a great awakening. And from what I understand, this awakening is beginning among the Native American communities.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
I can see that in a lot of places on the websites where I post. I can see a lot of what they're writing there, that this awakening is happening, and it's becoming a way of life to live the teachings of Jesus. Yeah. It's really a fantastic thing to be part of and to be witnessing these things happening.
Oh, it is. It is. And, you know, we're getting, we're in the Hebrew year 5765 right now. Mm-hmm. And they were supposed to be, they were expecting that, you know, in the last days, as they got closer to year 6000, that the Messiah would come.
Mm-hmm.
And, there's all kinds of exciting things. For instance, there's just today, news out of Jerusalem said a secretive encounter with a Bedouin in a desert valley led to the discovery of two fragments from a nearly 2,000-year-old parchment scroll.
Oh.
First such finding in decades, an Israeli archaeologist said Friday. And they found an old brown animal skin inscribed with Hebrew with verses from the book of Leviticus.
Oh,
and,
that's neat.
And, it's another Dead Sea Scroll. And,
yeah.
But the 4Q MMT scroll that a lot of these scrolls, you know, were basically found and translated and then kind of buried and because of what was on them. And the restoration of the Nazarene sect, you know, came about
mm-hmm.
because of what was found on the 4Q MMT scroll, and which I encourage people to look into. Yeah, but it is exciting that, you know, the Sanhedrin was revived last year. Another astounding thing that crossed my desk last night, and when I saw the date October 13th last night,
uh-huh.
I really became concerned because no one had said much about David Booth in several months because it's been almost 9 months since he went on the air on Feet to the Fire radio with James Janchik
mm-hmm.
and said that, delivered the message that he'd been given permission by Sister Lucia to finally deliver the third Fatima secret. Which
uh-huh.
had been suppressed by the church. And he delivered it on the 6th of October last year, and he said that the 13th of October would be the beginning of the wars and so forth and the pestilences that would lead us up to the end. And I'd forgotten all about it until last night. Mm-hmm. Somebody on our email list was talking about this,
mm-hmm.
and I went, oh, my gosh, because I realized that was the day. The 13th of October was the very day that the Sanhedrin was revived.
Oh.
And, they didn't choose that day lightly. You know, it was, but on the other hand, they didn't, there was no publicity that David could have known about that the Sanhedrin
mm-hmm.
was going to be revived.
Wow.
And there's an old tradition that the year in which the Sanhedrin was revived, and it's been 1,600 years, would be the year of the redemption.
Wow.
So, you know, they've already found a lot of the temple artifacts that they need to start temple worship again. You know, they've got the ashes of the red heifer,
mm-hmm.
thanks to Vandal Jones, the ashes of the red heifer, thanks to Magid Ben Yosef, who found the cave, they've got the temple incense.
Mm-hmm.
And, they need the Ark of the Covenant, and Vendel's been given permission to go look for it. And he's still, I talked to his wife this morning, she said there, Vendel's still looking for, the $80,000 that he needs to go looking for it. And, he wanted to, he thinks he knows where to dig. But can you imagine if they found the Ark of the Covenant?
Well, I think that there's one other thing that has to occur before some of these other things, and I believe that that is the house of Joseph. I believe they will unite with the house of Judah. In Ezekiel 37:19, it says, Creator says, he will join the house of Judah and the house of Joseph to one stick, and those tribes associated with them. And I believe part of that is the Native Americans. And I believe Hopi are a part of the House of Joseph. And I believe that they will unite on walking the Red Road, on that Native American spiritual path. And walking the Red Road is in harmony with the Torah. It's in harmony with the white path of Cherokee. And as far as I know, it's in harmony with the teachings that Messiah taught the Hopi in the beginning when they came into the fourth world.
Uh-huh.
So I believe that that is what they will unite on as a common ground.
Well, tell us about Chief Mike and what he said years ago about what he came to believe about Jerusalem.
Well, I don't know very much about that. And the conversations that we had were sacred conversations, so it isn't something I can repeat. But he spoke some with John outside of that, and one of the statements, and this has been validated now by the family of Chief Mike and other Hopi, that the Hopi say that their fathers told them they came from Jerusalem. And so that is their holy place. And most people now know that the six-pointed blue star, the Star of David, is sacred to the Hopi people. And when the Kachina dances and throws that, does the blue star dance, and throws the, throws the star or whatever he's carrying on the ground, that's the end of the Hopi religion. And Pahana will bring them a new religion. And I believe that this new religion is going to be walking the red road. It isn't a religion so much, it's a way of life. It's a way of living. And I believe that's what the Hopi, that I believe is what is going to purify the Hopi people. The red force that has to do with Pahana, I believe that's the walking the red road. Because their prophecy was that the red force will purify the Hopi people. And we know that it can't be a man, because one man cannot purify the heart of another man. But if they walk the red road, their hearts will become purified. And I think it's as the Hopi become purified walking the red road, I believe also the Orthodox Jews have to move to this position. They can't go only on mind and intellectual. They also have to walk the red road, the spiritual path of the Torah. They also need to reach that place, because otherwise, what does the house of Joseph have to come home to unite to? They need a spiritual brotherhood is what they need.
Yes, that's right. Well, you know, there is a part of the Torah that is spiritual, isn't it? You know, Kabbalah really is nothing more than kind of revealed religion.
Mm-hmm.
But
and love itself is spiritual. You know, like it says in the New Testament, God is love. That's real. God really is spirit of unconditional love. And if we're going to unite with him, if we're going to be happy living with him when we cross over, we also have to be this spirit of unconditional love. So that's required. It isn't just an option. We can't say, well, Jesus died on the cross, so everything's cool, we're all ready now, and then carry evil in our heart. There's no way we can carry evil in our heart and unite with unconditional love, which is God. It just won't happen.
Yeah, I agree. But there are things in the wind. There's going to be some big changes. But a lot of people are waking up to a lot of different things.
Yeah.
Kind of difficult to know really what's going to happen.
Oh, that's for sure.
As far as the rest of this year goes. But, you know, when I read that thing about October 13th, I went, whoa, that's really interesting.
Wow. Do you think that's this year, October 13th?
Well, apparently, you know, October 13th.
Oh, last year.
Well, October 13th coming up will be the 88th anniversary of the last time that the apparition of Mary gave a message at Fatima.
Oh, okay.
So, on the 87th anniversary of that, the Sanhedrin was revived, and even though it has no legal authority. The rabbinate is the legal authority mm-hmm. as far as matters that are Jewish in Israel. But the reason why the Sanhedrin broke up was because of Gentiles. And the reason why they were revived was because of the Gentile movement, you know, wanting to practice the covenant of Noah, the Noahide laws. And there were seven of the Ten Commandments that were oddly enough recognized by the U.S. government in 1990 by joint session of Congress and Senate.
I don't think there's going to be an in-between thing, though, like the Joes coming home, the house of Joseph coming home to unite with Judah. I don't think there's going to be an in-between thing like Noahites or something like that. I really don't believe that. I think that it's going to be a union of spiritual brotherhood. And until both parties can get to this spiritual place, how can there be a union? There can't be one.
Well, you know, when people, you know, talk about the descendants of Joseph, you know, I think sometimes they think only about the Anglo-Saxons. But, you know, I was talking to a member of the Sanhedrin a few weeks ago, and he said, you know, he says there's an old prophecy that said that the 10 tribes would return in the same order that they left in. And the first, you know, the first tribe to come back in was Manasseh. Well, Manasseh, you know, there was members of the 10 tribes that also went east from Jerusalem. They didn't all go north. You know, there were, plus there was another incident that was completely separate, you know, where members of the tribe of Benjamin took off, and it's known that they were the ancestors of the Normans and the Norse. So, but already, you know, you've got Manasseh coming back in from India. You've got other of the tribes that are coming back in from Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
And they're mean motor scooters. They are hardcore warriors. These are the people that were Northern Alliance that fought with the U.S. against the Taliban. And they kept their tribal names. They kept enough of their culture that I believe that the rabbi said they won't have to go through reconversion.
That they do?
That they won't.
Oh, they won't have to.
The group that came from India, the descendants of Manasseh, they do not have to go through reconversion.
What John Red Hat used to teach was that the Cherokee were descendants of Keturah, the third wife of Abraham. And that was why the Cherokee elders that were fasting were told to call themselves Keturah, with
right.
the W and the R. Just.
Right.
But John used to teach that the Keturah, that they left and headed east, that Abraham sent them east.
Uh-huh.
And that the Keturah's people, descendants, joined. There were some of the 12 tribes of Israel that joined with them, and then they headed east and maybe through New Zealand and down that way and into the Americas. But
they could have gone to the Black Sea and hooked up with Phoenicians. Come over that way.
And anyway, so if they were descendants of the Cherokee, the ancestors of the Cherokee, that maybe it is the Cherokee who are now going to lead them back again to their home, to unite back in Israel again,
well,
in Jerusalem.
Yeah, that...
I don't know, but it's kind of interesting to think about.
Yeah, it would be interesting. You know, and the more I talked to this rabbi, the more astounded he was he'd read some of the parallels and so forth.
Uh-huh.
Some of the nuances... Of Cherokee tradition that he really didn't understand, that really got him thinking more along those lines. But, you know, he said, that, you know, even though there was all these evidences, he said, based on what he knew then, you know, that Jerry would have to go through conversion, you know, because they'd stopped practicing circumcision and so forth and so on, you know, which was the basis of it's really kind of the foundation, you know.
Right, you know, the right. It is. The seventh day Sabbath and circumcision are two of the signs of the house of Israel.
Right, exactly. But some of these other groups aren't, they're apparently not going to require conversion to the point where, because they haven't gone far enough afield. But the big question, you know, with the descendants of Joseph that are Anglo-Saxon is their belief and how they believe in Jesus.
I'll see you.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
It is so great to have our friend Marie Osman back here on GMA, and she has some important information about making sure your family is prepared for natural disaster. She's the new national spokesperson for Wise Company, which makes dehydrated and freeze-dried emergency foods and food storage products. She's here to tell us about that. Marie, you've been given the opportunity to endorse probably 9 billion things over the course of your career.
True.
Why the Wise Company?
The reason I wanted to do it is because it's affordable. You can eat a meal for a dollar. It's less than school lunch. It's affordable, but really, look at what's been going on with Sandy and Katrina. I mean, what was it, $78 billion of damage done just here in New York and New Jersey.
So what is this?
What it is it's emergency meals. And, you know, it's not your grandmother's kind, not the beans and rice and the gross chicken-tasting garbage. This is lasagna and really good stuff. And I swear to you, why am I here talking about this? Because I know it's going to save thousands and thousands and thousands of lives. You put it under your bed. It's convenient. Stick it in your closet. If something happens, I have it in my car. All you do is you open it and you add water. You don't even have to add hot water.
Right.
And it's affordable. It's convenient. It tastes really good. Taste the peaches. They're fantastic.
This is a peach?
But they're different than every other company because it's like dehydrated. And freeze-dried, and they combine whatever. I swear it's fantastic. Just try it.
I'm trying it right now, Marie
Osman.
Put it
under your bed, put it in your closet, give it for Christmas to people, and save lives.
Thank you very much. Will you tell Donnie that we said we hope his rear feels better?
Well, you know, it's kind of a bummer, but I'll tell him.
No, Marie Osman, great having you on.
It's
the Wise
so fun
Company.
To be here.
Great to be with you.
It's always fun to be here. This is a great place.
All right.
Friends, this is Will Bluewater. If you'd like to find out more about Wise Foods, visit wisefoods.org.
You know, the deification of Jesus as opposed to the way that Moses, I mean, the whole idea of Messiah was given to them by God and by Moses. And the Gentiles, you know, in the first and second century kind of changed the rules. And so the Christian idea of what a Messiah is, as opposed to the Judaic idea of what Messiah could be legally, is the big rub. And unless and until Christians can kind of go back and take a look at what happened and then, you know, take a look at the real history, and even with the shards of history that are available, I think people can put it together.
Yeah. Well, John Redhat used to teach that Christianity cannot be fixed by a Band-Aid approach. He said there is no way, because Christianity is built on a total counterfeit foundation. It isn't built on the truth. It isn't built on what Jesus taught. There is no way they can continue in the Christian church and join with Judah. There is no way. It's counterfeit. It's on the wrong foundation.
Yeah.
So they have to come out of Christianity, and I don't know how Creator is going to lead this, but I believe it's walking the red road. I believe it's the Native American path. And that's why I believe the Native Americans will be the leaders of this union, because they aren't so locked into the false teachings of Christianity. Well, they are more into following Jesus' teachings, which are in harmony with the ancestors, the way they lived. And that's what the union will have to be on.
Yeah.
Therefore, Joes, within the Christian church, there is no way they can join with Judah. Judah would feel unclean to accept them in union with them. There just is no way for that to happen.
Yeah. Well, maybe if Christians can take a look at the reconstruction of the book of Matthew. It's available at the Netzarim website, and particularly reading the first five chapters of the conflict between the church and the synagogue by Parks.
Christians need to find love. They need to find unconditional love.
Yep.
And when they have that, then they will have it, whether they're in the church or out of the church or wherever they are. But it's got to be the love in the heart. And until they find that that's a requirement. That isn't an option that Jesus taught. That's the requirement to get to heaven, to live with Creator after we cross over. And when they find the love, that's what they can unite on. But short of that, there is nothing to unite.
Well, the notion that the Christians replaced Israel...
Yeah, I've heard that one.
It's just ridiculous. I mean, it goes...
Yeah, it is.
It's kind of like it's this quantum leap. The Torah was painstaking. You know, Christians look at the Torah as being something painful and hard, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, really, you know, the Jews look at it as, hey, it's a perfect document. It was the way
mm-hmm.
they were told that they could get close to God. And really, most Christians really, they're raised with anti-Semitic, not anti-Semitic, there's another word for it, because it's just, they're raised with ideas about Jews that are incorrect.
Yeah, and they're pretty much taught that the Old Testament is Jews' stuff and Christian stuff is in the New Testament.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're dividing them, and Jesus never taught against the Torah.
That's right. Absolutely right.
So they should, Christianity and Judaism should be in harmony.
Well, you know, the whole reason why I started walking on this road as far as history goes is a good friend of mine started talking about the protocols of the Elders of Zion, and started getting excited and talking about the Jews this and the Jews that. I mean, this man's a Book of Mormon believer, and so
mm-hmm.
I thought to myself,
mm-hmm.
well, this isn't right, you know. So I thought, well, I've got to bone up on this.
Mm-hmm.
And the Book of Mormon doesn't just talk about Indians; it says that the Book of Mormon says that, you know, basically the Gentiles really don't have any business talking bad against the Jews, because, it says, you know, they, in the Book of Mormon, God speaking says, hey, I will remember the covenant I made with who I will remember it with, and the Jews are my ancient people, and basically Gentiles don't have any business talking bad about the Jews. And it comes
mm-hmm.
right out and says, if it were not for the diligence of the Jews,
mm-hmm.
that the Gentiles would have no redemption.
Mm.
So, but these are things, you know, it's the same old problem I ran into with people in the Bible churches, is they pick and choose and cherry pick what they want to believe, and they emphasize what
mm-hmm.
they want to. And rather than, you know, they've got their own law, but they break it. They're lawless.
Mm-hmm.
And, the Book of Mormon, this person was saying, well, this is my standard. But, you know, he wasn't upholding his own standard.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was just kind of blind to, and a lot of people are like that. You know, they just...
Yeah, that's true.
They blind themselves to, they believe what they want to. And
some of that is true of all of us, because I know for myself, it's so hard to look within me and find a flaw.
Oh, yeah.
We want to try to rationalize it away right away and pretend it isn't there or excuse it or justify it or something.
Yep.
But when we recognize that we have something within there, then it's like Creator takes it away immediately. Then it's gone. Yeah. I've had that happen, and it's just fantastic. But I know how hard it is to look within and find our problems so that we can move closer to Creator, so we can get to this beautiful place. And I think where it talks, let's see, I can't remember which book it's in, but it talks about there will be a new covenant that Creator will give us a new covenant. He will write His law in our hearts. And then people won't have to teach each other about God,
yeah,
because everybody will know Him. And I believe that that is unconditional love in the heart. Once you have it, you know God. You know that this is what God is. And you get that communication with Creator, and it's just absolutely fantastic. There's a wonderful, awesome power in it.
Well, there's a passage in Jeremiah that said that, before he sent them out of Egypt, you know, God didn't tell them what they were supposed to do, and He didn't give them a lot of laws, and there was basically two Torahs. So there was a Torah of emanations, which is really kind of the original. That was the first Torah that was written directly by the finger of God, talked about in Exodus 31.
Mm-hmm.
And then that was the one that was brought down the mountain the first time. And then the second Torah, you know, the Torah of remaking, was given as a replacement for the first, because God didn't think Israel was ready for the first one.
Wow.
So, you know, Jesus, I guess in a way He was a Torah. Some people believe there are some Jews that believe that He was the personification of Torah, and because of His perfect love.
That could be too.
Yep. Yep. And of course, you know, like I said, like you said, He didn't say anything against the law. He upheld it.
Mm-hmm.
He just reintroduced the idea that God could write directly on your heart without having somebody go in between.
Yeah, I'm really excited about things that are happening. I think that things are going to begin really moving fast. We're going to see so many different levels. There's all this horrible stuff, the terrorist stuff and all that. But on the other side, I think we're going to see this enlightening of people, and they're moving into this beautiful place, and more of them are finding this wonderful, loving place where we have a oneness with Creator, and we can walk in companionship with Him. And that is just absolutely fantastic. That's just joy beyond anything you can imagine.
Well, can you imagine, Jesus talked about the parable of the wheat and tares. It said that the wheat and tares would be allowed to grow up together,
mm-hmm.
but there would come a time when the wicked would be removed. Well, that's the opposite of the rapture. So how are you going to do that? How could God fulfill that? That's really interesting.
I think that it looks like maybe those who walk with Creator may be taken off of the earth for a time, because there is the verse, I believe it's in Malachi, that says that the righteous will walk on the ashes of the wicked. Now that means if the righteous were there with the wicked when the wicked turned to ashes, then they would be ashes too.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah, maybe there's going to be some...
I don't know what's going to happen there, but I do believe Creator has a plan.
Wouldn't that be interesting if some of the New Agers were right, that literally... because of the vibrations that we have, that we'll survive and they'll just kind of disappear.
There could be something to that. I think the New Ages have been doing a lot of searching, and I think that they have found many elements of truth in their searches.
Yep, because, there's a scripture that says that at some point God's going to come out of His hiding place.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what David Booth was saying, let me go back and read this. He was saying that there was going to be some kind of really dramatic things that were going to happen. Let me read the statement. He said this on the 6th of October last year. He says, next week, on October 13th, will be the 87th year since the Holy Mother last warned this world about these times and the events that must occur shortly. The Church, and he was speaking of the Catholic Church, has not heeded this warning, nor have the people of this world obeyed their God. The Holy Mother had stated that if her requests were granted, there would be peace. They have not been, and he was talking about the Catholic Church, what they're supposed to do with Russia. They're supposed to go do something in Russia. Can't remember the word for it.
Mm-hmm.
Dedicated for peace or something. Anyway, mm-hmm. He says they have not been, and now there will be a war, plagues and pestilences as the punishment for mankind that she has foretold. From this moment forward, the Lord will punish this earth and its people, so they will know that he is their God and we are his children. Turn away now from all men and the buildings of men, and I will teach you and lead you, commands God to the world of men today. The Lord commands his people to turn away now from all graven images and to not put their faith in objects of stone, silver, or gold, because in God alone lies one's true treasure. Listen to no man or group of men who say they speak for God, for they are all liars and thieves and have forsaken the church for their own gain.
Mm-hmm.
And likewise, to give your gold and silver to any man who claims they speak for God is to partake of the wrath God has reserved for these false prophets. This wicked generation of men have become lovers of death, adultery, and gold, and have created their own gods, and even believe they are gods themselves. This wicked generation of men have been led into the pens for slaughter by men who seek glory for themselves, and they will have their reward, the fires of hell. Our Lord has asked, can we not see the signs of the times, and has it not been written, and God said, let there be lights in the firmament of the heaven to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and years. This is for understanding. I will no longer be mocked by this generation and will visit upon them my full and utter wrath until every man bows down before me and knows that I am their God and they are my people. God alone is now the shepherd for his flock and will lead them, for in the valley of the decision, the great and terrible of the day of the Lord is at hand. Now that was the message.
Mm-hmm.
That was it. And that was given to just 87 years after the original Fatima. Interesting, huh?
Yeah.
And then, but the thing that blew my mind was that the date he said the very next week was the date the Sanhedrin reinstituted. And then the Jews have got this old tradition that the year in which the Sanhedrin came back would be the year of redemption.
So
boy, I'm really looking for some exciting things to happen. But
I am too.
Yeah, the Jewish New Year starts in the fall, and
I believe we're going to be seeing more things this year yet.
Oh yeah, yeah. It looks like that prophecy I was given about the year of the great havoc. It's not over till the fat lady sings, but it's been a pretty wacky year weather-wise.
Yeah.
But
I think that there may be a lot more yet coming this year.
Yeah. Well, you know, when you get the Pentagon and the Vatican and
things can happen overnight.
Oh,
so.
Yeah. Everybody's talking about climate collapse.
Yeah.
And Bill Clinton. I wasn't aware of the fact that he went down to New Zealand. There was an international Antarctic center, and he told several hundred people, unless we change course, most scientists believe the seas will rise so high they will swallow whole islands and coastal areas.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
He said that either.
Well, the John Paul II made a similar statement.
Uh-huh. Well, I've been having so many dreams of flooding. There's always lots of water, and I'm always struggling, trying to climb or do something like that. But I'm having so many dreams of flooding.
Yep, me too.
And I think a lot of people are, from what I'm hearing.
Me too. Yeah, my first wife showed up here recently. She was in a battle tank.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it's really interesting. Oh. You know, she said, you know, that when I needed her, she'd show up. She told me to hop in the tank, and I said, "Where are we going?" And I looked in front of me, and there was this flooded area.
Oh, and, wow.
She just said, "Well, we're going to go over here to the practice area," and there was some kind of a simulator drills that we were running. So from the dream, I got that, you know, that she and others were getting ready on the other side, you know, for what was going to happen also.
Because, I believe that.
Well, flood.
Yeah.
You know, the imagery of a flood also has to do with invasion. And
oh, okay.
So, I think at
the beginning, when John and I first started working together, when Creator called both of us and brought us together, I was given four things right at the beginning. And one was that I was anointed by the Holy One of Israel. And the second one was that I would be protected until this work was done.
Yeah.
And then the third one was, wherever Creator sends me, He would go first and prepare the way.
Yeah.
And then the fourth one was that I don't have to prove myself to anyone. And boy, I love that one.
Yeah.
Because if I did, I sure couldn't, because I sure wouldn't have been the one I would have chosen, I don't think, to do this work. But if Creator chose me, then I think one of the things it shows that it is His strength doing this work, not the strength of man.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
It's the little yellow pill that scientists say could eliminate chronic diseases and help you live well into your hundreds.
You might be able to increase the lifespan of a mammal by 50%. And, of course, if that was a human being, then that might be in the order of 130 to 150 years.
That claim might be hard to swallow, but tonight on ABC's Primetime Live, co-anchor John Quinones takes the promising antioxidant therapy called Protandim.
I have become a guinea pig for ABC News and Primetime. It's not a drug. It's a supplement. It's called Protandim, and it's a combination of five exotic plants that have been around for centuries.
Have you discovered the fountain of youth?
I wouldn't put it that way, but we may have discovered something that will tell us a lot more about how we age, what happens biochemically, and maybe how we can slow it down.
Quinones has been taking Protandim for 2 weeks now and tells Extra,
I am sleeping better. I feel a lot better and also energized when I do wake up.
Primetime puts Protandim to the test tonight.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
Or a woman, in this case.
Well.
I love that, because I was given those right at the beginning. And John was given four things at the beginning, too. That was his mission, more or less. And one of the first things was take Christianity back to the early years, to live and teach the spiritual teachings of Torah and Jesus, and then help Christians be aware of the need to return to walking a spiritual path that will lead to a spiritual oneness with Creator, like love is required for a oneness with the Heavenly Father, who is a spirit of unconditional love.
Right.
And the third thing he got was to help establish the truth of life in a spirit of universal brotherhood, like to help build bridges of brotherhood between various faiths based on unconditional love and respect. And the last one was to prepare for the battle between sons of light and the sons of darkness, to help prepare those who walk in harmony with Creator, Mother Earth, and all of creation to remain steadfast during times of testing and trials. For the day of purification is prophesied by the Hopi, and the time of tribulation prophesied in the Bible. And I think we're very close to those times. And that was part of Red Hat's mission, was to help people prepare for this. And I think the preparation is for people to learn to love other people unconditionally, because that's the only power on earth that can stop the games of Satan and the dark forces. John never liked me to say Satan. He always says, well, say the dark forces or the dark spirits. Because Satan is too Christian.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's just the easier way to go. You say
well,
Satan,
yeah.
And most people know what you're talking
well,
about.
Well, that's another point is until you know, in that period of time after the Gentiles just kind of co-opted, you know, Christianity, then they started getting ideas about imps and legions and devils and all this kind of stuff. It was totally foreign to what was taught by Moses. You know, and the original Satan, you know, he was a servant of God. He was the, you know, there was an accuser and then there was a redeemer. And, he was doing his job. And it's just kind of totally foreign. Well, I got an email last night from someone who sent me a link to the Zapatista website. I know the people in Mexico are really, you know, getting upset with what's going on. It looks like there might be another uprising of some kind. You know, John talked about, you know, them being blood-blooders of the Hopi. You know, if those people ever cross the border, they get the idea that Two Right Brothers here, I don't think there could be any stopping them.
Mm-hmm. Well, I believe that Creator is still working with the Hopi. That chapter has not been closed.
No. Nope.
I believe that the Hopi will complete their migration to Jerusalem. I believe that that's going to happen.
Yep.
So I guess we will have to wait and see, but Creator is going to do things His way. But I believe the Hopi will be the beginning of the return of the house of Joseph. That's what I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I guess we will have to wait and see how Creator works this out, because right now I sure don't see how it can happen.
Well, I know these rabbis are starting to take a close look at who's who and what's what, and but the people are starting to come back. But I want to share a dream that I thought was significant that I've had in the last couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I've been talking with people about the Netzarim, restored Nazarene Jews of Israel. Now these are people that have they have legal standing in Israel. Their leader before he converted and became an Orthodox Jew in good standing, his name was Clint Van Nest.
Mm-hmm.
His Hebrew name today is Yirmiyahu Ben Dawid. And he's a former Baptist minister who attended Hampton DuBose Academy with a sister or daughter of Billy Graham or something like that. But he was a person that discovered and kind of brought back the Nazarene sect from the dead, as it were. But I had a dream of a dove, and I think everybody, you know, universally the dove is a symbol of the Spirit of God. But anyway, I couldn't really see the dove. I knew the dove was there, but it was kind of grayed out, invisible, but you could see its outline. And the dove was kind of marching, you know. And, you know, he'd raise one foot, you know, and you could see him raise his wings as he raised his foot. And, you know, you could tell this dove was marching. And then behind him, I saw the outline of a man, and the man was in step with the dove. I mean, the dove was in front of me, and I could see it in profile. And then I saw the man behind him walking in step with the dove. And then I realized that I was shown, well, his face. You know, and his face was the face of Yirmiyahu ben Dawid. And when I woke up, I was thinking, the Creator's trying to tell me that this man is in step with the Spirit of God.
Oh, wow.
So, you know.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it's netzarim.co.il. There's a link from the front of my website where people can go. A lot of good reading that you can look into and see a lot of what Jesus taught originally. And then you can actually enter into their distance learning school, and that's what I'm in the process of doing right now.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, learning about Torah, learning about ancient Judaism, but it's really sad that there even was a separation
Yes, it is. It really is.
Because there never really should have been.
No, there should not have been. They should have been remained in spiritual harmony.
Yep. Yeah, that's true. Well, you getting sleepy yet?
A little bit.
Okay. Well, if you don't want to give you every opportunity, I've done a lot of talking in this interview. I usually.
It's been great. I like to listen to what you have to say. You have learned so much. You're doing so much studying and research and learning all these new things. It's just fantastic. And I love your website, Prophecy Keepers. That is really awesome. You have so much stuff on there.
It's a lot of fun. I sure miss seeing you. You know, you guys came and lived here for a few weeks. And you visited here several times. And I really miss John. I really do.
Oh, so do I. I miss him a lot.
But I can sure see him moving in the background.
Yeah, and it's like he can do so much more on the other side now than he could do when he was in such bad health at
yeah.
the end. And he's doing it now, and I just love knowing that he's there. He's guiding me, and he gives me information when I need it, and he's teaching me things. He's teaching me things about that I need to see within myself that I have to fix. And
yep.
It's all part of the same package. I get to grow spiritually as I do the work. And that's fantastic.
Yeah. Now, before we go, is there anybody you visited this year? Any other things that you feel like we need to know about?
Not that I can think of. I'll probably think of it after we hang up.
Yeah, I didn't know if you made any trips back up to Hopi or anything. And...
Yes, we did make a trip back to Hopi. And I've made a couple trips back there within about the last year. And so I know that Creator is still, that chapter is still open. Last summer, Creator brought a woman from Switzerland here. And then there was another woman here in Albuquerque that had come from New Zealand among the Maori Indians. And the two of them invited me to go to Hopi with them because the lady from Switzerland, that's what she really wanted to do when she came to the United States was to go to the Hopi. And so since I drag my feet sometimes and I didn't want to go to Hopi by myself, it was like this was Creator's way of... bringing me back to Hopi.
Right.
So the three of us went there, and we had a wonderful visit with the family of Chief Mike and some of the other Hopi there. So I know that Creator has that chapter open yet. I know he's still working with the Hopi. And I expect to see some really fantastic things there. And maybe it will happen this year. I'm kind of hoping that it will happen soon. But it's all in Creator's time.
Yep. Well, I guess you were telling me that there is no longer a village chief there at O'Reilly because they don't have anybody of the right clan.
That's my understanding.
Interesting.
I believe they have elders running the village.
Well, Ghost Wolf was telling me that, you know, of his friends, that... they're really worried because nobody's interested in ceremonies anymore. It's hard to get anybody to do anything traditional.
Yeah, so I think that that's one reason I think that Creator is going to do something soon. I think that he will remember the Hopi and bless them. And because of the ones who are still hanging on to tradition and who have the love in their heart, as Masah taught them at the beginning, I believe Creator is going to honor this. And I believe that's why I believe the migration will be completed soon.
Remember his covenants.
Yeah.
And it's, and I encourage people to study, you know, the story about Masah because he was a really interesting character. They never really saw his face. They just knew that somebody had literally pummeled him. And he was scarred and beaten and bloody but he was playful.
Wow.
He led them to where they are and told them to stay there until he came back.
Mm-hmm. There is one thing I would like to mention. There is another book out now that has incorporated Red Hat's teachings into it.
Really?
Yeah, and that is The Guardian, Oasis, by Dale L. Gustafson.
That's your anthropologist friend, right?
No, actually that's my son.
Oh, okay.
He studied under Red Hat also, and so John taught him. They used to sit and have all these conversations. So Dale has incorporated them into a fantastic novel of survival after a cataclysmic event.
Really? Is that available?
Yeah, it should be available now to order.
What?
And the name of, pardon?
What, did he use iUniverse like you did? Or?
Yes, he did.
Okay. Uh-huh. We'll put up a link to the book from this interview is what we'll do.
And that sounds good, yeah.
So there's a link to your website, Red Hat Speaks,
mm-hmm.
and a link to your new book and to your old book. There's one up there right now on the front page of the website.
Okay,
and also from
the page.
And
there's so much in this new book, Red Hat's Wisdom, that was, I tried to be kind of mild on the first book, but on this last one, on Red Hat's Wisdom, I put in a lot of the teachings that Red Hat taught me about the deception that's happening in the world today, and it's really a dark thing.
Yeah.
And I really hope if people can get a hold of that book that they will read it.
Well, I was blind to a lot of it myself, and Red Hat didn't really, it wasn't something that he preached at me about, it was it just kind of rubbed off on me.
I'm amazed at how much I learned from him. Every time I start writing something down, I remember, this is what Red Hat and I discussed, and this is what he taught me. And some of the things I really didn't want to hear, I didn't want to hear these things about Christianity.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I have found so much truth in what he has taught me.
Yeah, that's true. And you can get a horse to water, And
yeah.
I'll tell you, the more I find out about him, he was the original international man of mystery.
Red. He certainly was.
he was really something. He was really something.
He was awesome. He was different things to different people. Different people saw different things in him, and they got different things from him.
Yeah. Well, he talked, in your book, you talk about blind people describing an elephant. Well,
yeah.
He was an elephant himself.
Yeah, he sure was. People saw different things.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
they,
right.
They really did. And he was kind of an enigma.
Mm-hmm.
He just was really, really interesting. Had a lot of different layers to him.
Oh, he sure did. He was really an awesome man.
Well, you can imagine with 28 years in the military, what kind of stuff he might have been up to.
Yeah.
And then hanging around with Rabbi Joseph Jason, who was...
He really raved about Rabbi Jason.
Yeah.
He said that he had a mind that was absolutely brilliant. They would start talking about something, and he would start quoting from the Torah, and he could tell you exactly where it was, what verse, and he could quote it, and it was just awesome.
Well... See, Jesus had the same kind of mind. He knew the Torah backward, frontward, upside down.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And you just could not argue. That was the thing about it. You couldn't argue with Jesus on the subject of the Torah.
Yeah. Well, one of the interesting things about John Red Hat was that he wanted to help those in society that society had cast out as worthless. And those were the ones he wanted to reclaim and show them that life is good.
Yep.
Give them a will to live and bring them back into the mainstream.
So you're talking about the ones that receive the right hand of fellowship followed by the left foot of fellowship, right? People like me.
and then there is the part, about righteousness is ethical behavior.
Yep.
But to be good is merely to conform to the social ideals of other people.
That's right.
So,
right. Yeah.
And the people that have been cast out by society didn't want to conform to what society was telling them they had to be.
Yeah.
And so these were the people that John was trying to reclaim and tell them, yes, you are worthwhile. God made you. He doesn't make junk.
Yeah, that's right.
So,
that's absolutely right. Well, I sure encourage everybody to read your new book and the old book. They're very
thank
valuable.
Thank you very much.
They're very valuable, and we certainly bless you as you go along your way. And we've got this show. We're getting a new computer soon, and which is several months late. I know we've been talking about it for a while, but you know, the person that was making it was a young person, and he was in a little trouble himself.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to face some things about that, but we're finally going to get to the computer.
That's great.
And I've kind of been conserving space because I don't have a lot of room.
Mm-hmm.
I've only got 882 megabytes left on a 30 gig hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as I get the new computer, I'll go at least two, maybe three shows a week.
Oh, that sounds great.
Well, Dottie, we sure appreciate you coming on and being on Prophecy Keepers again. And
thank you very much for letting me share with you.
That and we always forward all your messages that you send over from your discussion groups. And
well, thank you so much for that.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
It is so great to have our friend Marie Osmond back here on GMA, and she has some important information about making sure your family is prepared for natural disaster. She's the new national spokesperson for Wise Company, which makes dehydrated and freeze-dried emergency foods and food storage products. She's here to tell us about that. Marie, you've been given the opportunity to endorse probably 9 billion things over the course of your career.
True.
Why the Wise Company?
The reason I wanted to do it is because it's affordable. You can eat a meal for a dollar. It's less than school lunch. It's affordable, but really, look at what's been going on with Sandy and Katrina. I mean, what was it, $78 billion of damage done just here in New York and
right.
New Jersey.
So what is this?
What it is it's emergency meals, and you know, it's not your grandmother's kind, not the beans and rice and the gross chicken-tasting garbage. This is lasagna and really good stuff, and I swear to you, why am I here talking about this? Because I know it's going to save thousands and thousands and thousands of lives. You put it under your bed, it's convenient, stick it in your closet. If something happens, I have it in my car. All you do is you open it and you add water. You don't even have to add hot water.
Right.
And it's affordable, it's convenient, it tastes really good. Taste the peaches, they're fantastic.
This is a peach?
But they're different than every other company because it's like dehydrated. And freeze-dried, and they combine whatever. I swear it's fantastic. Just try it.
I'm trying it right now, Marie
Osmond.
Put it
under your bed, put it in your closet, give it for Christmas to people, and save lives.
Thank you very much. Will you tell Donnie that we said we hope his rear feels better?
Well, you know, it's kind of a bummer, but I'll tell him.
No, Marie Osmond, great having you on.
It's
the Wise
so fun
Company.
To be here.
Great to be with you.
It's always fun to be here. It's a great place.
All right.
Friends, this is Will Bluewater. If you'd like to find out more about Wise Foods, visit wisefoods.org.
Well, we'll see you next time around, folks.
Okay.
Next week and on Prophecy Keepers, and Wado for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library, which includes lifetime online access to a printable 1,000-page intelligence briefing and a worldwide indigenous prophecy encyclopedia. Now, folks, there's nothing else like this collection on the planet, all for $9.99, formerly priced at $29.99. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files, and 222 folders. That includes the Prophecy Keepers Preppers Self-Reliance files and all of our previous over 100 Prophecy Keepers interviews. So head on over to prophecykeepers.com right now and have a free sneak peek today of two-thirds of the Prophecy Keepers trilogy and a peek of the dashboard of the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault. Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
You want to get an edge on turning back the clock with just a few pills? Who doesn't? Well, it's no longer science fiction, but science possibility, a potential breakthrough. As I found out firsthand, there may be a way to erase years, at least inside my body. Granted, it's down the road, but some scientists are wondering if a new pill I took might offer a very long life.
It may not look like the Fountain of Youth, but inside this nondescript building, I'm about to become part of an exciting experiment, a kind of guinea pig.
Dr. McCord, okay.
I'm here at the University of Colorado in Denver to meet Dr. Joe McCord, a world-renowned scientist.
This is pretty exciting stuff you're finding, huh?
It is. We're very excited about it.
His latest research could very well unravel the mystery of aging itself. And his decades of experiments may have the potential of adding years to people's lives and possibly prevent chronic diseases like cancer, diabetes, and heart disease. It all centers around this small yellow pill, and for me, it begins with a blood test.
It wouldn't be the first time I've given blood for this company.
They want to check my levels of something called T-bars, which is a rough indicator of a person's actual age. T-bars can identify a condition known as oxidative stress, a kind of measure of the wear and tear on our bodies. Oxidative stress, like the rusting of an engine, is not a good thing.
Bad for the body.
Leading to disease.
Leading to disease and leading to malfunction, and importantly, leading to what we call aging. It is a slow progression of increasing oxidative stress. That's the main characteristic biochemically of the aging process.
The problem of aging begins with the very food we eat to give us energy. As our cells burn that food, they also release toxic chemicals. Those chemicals, you may know them as free radicals, react with all the components of our cells, literally bombarding them millions of times per second, damaging all our cells. The result? Oxidative stress. And we all have it. The body fights back with a system of defenses. It makes two antioxidant enzymes, catalase and SOD, whose job is to gobble up the free radicals before they can harm our cells.
So, doctor, how often do I take these?
And so, here I go. With that swallow, I've just become part of a potentially landmark scientific experiment.
Doesn't taste bad.
It's called Protandim, and tests on both mice and humans have already shown that it revs up the manufacture of those good enzymes in our bodies. More enzymes, fewer free radicals to harm us. Whether that will lead to longer life is still unknown. Experiments to see if mice live longer are about to get underway, but it's a tantalizing theory.
Right now, all we know is that this preparation decreases oxidative stress. Oxidative stress is not a disease, just like aging is not in itself a disease, but it's something that accompanies and is attached to many disease processes. So you can see the age-related...
Normally, oxidative stress, measured by those T-bars, increases with age. But in Dr. McCord's tests, taking just one pill of Protandim a day reversed that trend for everyone at every age, even for an 80-year-old.
They all... are reduced to the level of oxidative stress that one would expect, frankly, in a newborn or a very young child.
Back to the oxidative stress levels of a child? It sounds too good to be true. Will Protandim work on me?
The scientific evidence is there. The pieces seem to make sense. The question is, does this translate into something that humans can take advantage of?
And so, ancient Eastern healing and modern Western medicine may soon be working together. High oxidative stress is associated with more than aging. It's been linked to hundreds of illnesses.
It's at the very center of many diseases. Liver disease, diabetes, emphysema, asthma. I've studied all of these. Strokes, heart attacks.
Even mental disease.
Yes.
Depression?
Alzheimer's disease, depression.
Dr. James Crapo with the National Jewish Medical Center in Denver is also researching Protandim for the company.
Are you saying that this could be a cure-all?
You're looking at something that will have a small impact, but an important impact.
We make no claims about curing any disease or preventing any disease. We hope that when enough studies are done, perhaps such claims might be able to be made in the future.
clinical studies to assess Protandim in both diabetes and heart disease should start in 3 to 4 months. But what about my progress? After nearly 2 weeks now, it's time to get my results. Dr. McCord calculates the numbers. The result? My level of oxidative stress has declined dramatically.
45%. That's excellent.
Just look at where I fall on the graph, before and after.
Which, if extrapolated back, is the level you would see in a newborn baby.
Have we turned back the clock? Well, maybe not on the outside, but deep inside, within my cells. Yes, indeed.
Would you suggest I keep taking this supplement?
I would. I can't guarantee it's going to extend your life. I can't guarantee it's going to eliminate any diseases or cure any diseases.
But we do know that oxidative stress is part of those disease processes. And I don't want to wait until I'm 80 years old and find out that I should have taken it.
For more, go to our website at abcnews.com.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
Major universities and government agencies initiated and continue self-funded studies following the ABC Primetime Investigative Report you just viewed that originally aired in 2005. These studies continue to reveal more scientific evidence about Protandim's unique benefits. They are published in major scientific and medical journals. The next video will bring you up to date.
Developed after 40 years of research and exclusively for LifeVantage, Protandim is a true scientific breakthrough in anti-aging. Protandim has been reported on ABC, NBC, and PBS, featured in the Wall Street Journal, and described in CNN Chief Medical Correspondent Dr. Sanjay Gupta's book, Chasing Life, The Quest for Immortality. Protandim's creator, Dr. Joe McCord, is a world-renowned scientist and a pioneer in free radical biology. Dr. McCord is the discoverer of the key anti-aging enzyme, superoxide dismutase. His role in the discovery is so significant, the enzyme is measured in McCord units. For Dr. McCord's discovery of superoxide dismutase and his contributions in free radical biology, he was awarded the Elliott Cresson Medal. This medal is awarded to distinguished inventors and scientists, putting Dr. McCord in the same company as Pierre and Marie Curie, Alexander Graham Bell, Orville Wright, and Henry Ford. Dr. Joe McCord has devoted his life's work to the study of free radicals, their role in aging, and the many problems associated with aging. Consumers spend billions every year on antioxidants in the form of food and supplements, hoping to reduce these free radicals. But antioxidants from these sources can only eliminate one free radical for every one antioxidant molecule you consume. Protandim is scientifically proven to slow cellular damage caused by free radicals. Taking one Protandim one time per day for 30 days turns on these anti-aging enzymes in your body. Your own enzymes eliminate free radicals at a rate of 1 million to 1.
I think any other supplements that are designed to be antioxidant supplements probably are no longer needed because Protandim solves that problem in a much more effective way.
Protandim is a breakthrough poised to revolutionize the anti-aging industry. It is an entirely new and scientifically validated way to fight aging, reducing your oxidative stress levels to that of a 20-year-old after just 30 days.
We found, as many other scientists had documented, that there is a progressive increase in T-bars in your blood the older you get. When these same people took Protandim for 30 days, the age-dependent increase in lipid peroxidation was completely eliminated. After Protandim, we could no longer distinguish the 80-year-old from the 20-year-old.
Protandim is protected by 3 U.S. patents. Universities around the world continue to initiate and fund their own studies of Protandim and to evaluate how this anti-aging breakthrough can prevent and improve many of the hundreds of problems associated with aging.
Many academic scientists at a number of universities have begun studying Protandim because it represents a new tool. It represents a way of reducing oxidative stress that wasn't available before. There simply was not a good way of doing what Protandim does. Protandim interacts with the DNA in your cells and causes the cells to make more of a set of genes called survival genes. The ingredients in Protandim were actually selected because they are largely metabolized by the liver, which does not interfere with most prescription drugs, which are generally metabolized by the kidneys. So the general answer to that is yes, it is safe. The immediate benefits of Protandim are within several days, the biochemical markers of oxidative stress begin to decrease. And while these are immediate improvements, you may not sense that these things are happening, just as you can't sense what your cholesterol level is, if it's high or low. But nonetheless, these benefits start happening within days of taking Protandim. The advantages to taking Protandim in the long term are that it protects your body from the relentless progression of free radical damage as we age. The anti-aging aspect of Protandim is one that accumulates over time, so the longer you take it, the more protection you will sustain. Missing a dose of Protandim is not a big problem. It takes about 2 weeks for the effects to go away. So if you miss it for 2 weeks, you're pretty much back to where you started from.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now. Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
Good afternoon. These are on, I presume. I'd like to talk to you today, and do I have control of these slides, or is I do? Okay. Let's get through these really quick, because this is just because you have to get CMEs, and I have to tell you that I am on the Speakers Bureau for GSK, GlaxoSmithKline, and also a nutritional consultant for an HIV nutritional company named Biosource Therapeutics, which has nothing to do with what I'm talking about today. What I'd like to talk to you about is something that I find thoroughly fascinating. It is glutathione. It is one of the four endogenous antioxidants, and it is one that I must admit, despite 80,000 published articles in the English literature, through medical school internship, residency, fellowship, and a fairly long time in academic medicine, I knew nothing about. It is a very interesting molecule because it exists in an accelerated or increased energy state. The energy state is, or increased energy state, is caused by the fact that it's got a free sulfhydryl group and therefore can easily donate the hydrogen to a electron and therefore quench a free radical. Now, let me tell you, because I think it's important, and it is a little bit of a divergence, but I learned about glutathione because of something that you probably all have seen in your practice, and that is a low uric acid. Now, when I was in medical school and when I was a professor of oncology, the only thing I knew about uric acid is when you had a kid that you were going to treat for leukemia, you put him on allopurinol to keep the uric acid down. I knew nothing about uric acid being low, except it kept appearing, and it appeared in about 20% of my patients, and that just didn't make sense. So I finally went into PubMed, and after stumbling around for a long time, I found out that uric acid is the last antioxidant your body uses when it's run out of everything else. When it's run out of gas, okay, it uses uric acid. Interesting. So if that's the last, the question then, what was the first? And that is where I got into glutathione. I've been coming to some of these meetings for a while, and glutathione is very important for a number of things, not all of which I'm going to go into today. But in point of fact, it has a great deal to do with not only well-being, okay, but aging well, or if you will, retarding the aging process. So I think it's very applicable. I'd like to, at the risk of repeating things that you already know, go over some of the things that glutathione is important about. Alone in the antioxidant world, okay, every other antioxidant, when it becomes oxidized, becomes itself a free radical. Glutathione doesn't. It actually recycles other antioxidants. In fact, the body considers it so important that up to 6% of the entire ATP expenditure or energy expenditure of the body may be used to synthesize and optimize glutathione levels. That's pretty impressive, 6% of the entire energy output of the body. It is also the only non-enzyme antioxidant that doesn't become a free radical and in fact has a very interesting corollary when it becomes oxidized, because what happens is it complexes to another spent glutathione molecule, and the compound then becomes GSSG, and GSSG has been shown in animal studies at least to promote and induce delta wave sleep. We all know the importance of that in terms of the aging process, so this, even in its used up form, functions as a very useful product. It not only functions as an antioxidant itself, but alone again in the world of antioxidants, it is an absolutely essential component of antioxidant enzymes, namely glutathione peroxidase, and most importantly, the glutathione transferases. And I bring that up because glutathione transferase abnormalities have now been associated with virtually every cancer known to man, and probably with a lot more than that. And therefore, by promoting the production of glutathione transferases through improving glutathione, we may be doing even more than I'm able to talk about right now. In addition, if that were not enough, let's keep going. It's a chelator. In fact, it's 50% as effective as oral chelation in getting rid of mercury. It has an effect on other heavy metals, but they're not as pronounced as mercury, and mercury is pretty ubiquitous in an environment, so it kind of comes as a freebie. And it detoxifies organic pollutants, perhaps the best known one of which is the two-carbon fragment that we know as alcohol. And in fact, without glutathione, you ultimately get a hangover because you stop the process at acetaldehyde, which is phase one detox, and that in itself is a free radical, and obviously many of us may have felt the effects of that if we didn't have enough glutathione. Now, why is it important in aging? Well, these are old data, and I think they're probably not as robust as they should be, but I'll give you what is available now. Glutathione levels decrease with age. The data would suggest it's 1% a year beginning in the 20s. I think that's too little, too late, but that's only my opinion right now. I haven't proved it. There are some very interesting things, though. Age-matched normals, okay, reveal that anybody at, say, 45 who's had his first heart attack or has asthma or whatever other disease you want to use has a lower glutathione level than somebody of that age who's well. So disease causes decrease in glutathione and an accelerated decrease compared to normals. Glutathione happens to be, and this is perhaps the take-home message, it's the major protector of mitochondrial DNA. Mitochondrial DNA is that DNA within the cells that's responsible, if you will, for the electron transport chain that produces every bit of energy in your body. And we know from pathologic data that if you take a biopsy from a 90-year-old and compare it to a biopsy in a 5-year-old, the mitochondrial DNA in the 90-year-old is only 5% normal compared to the 5-year-old. So obviously we destroy our mitochondrial DNA, we destroy our energy, and we age. Maintenance of normal mitochondrial DNA is directly correlated, and it's got an R value above 9.9, with aging. So the higher your glutathione, the less you age. And I think
it's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
Let the true.